Hello, everybody. I'm Dustin Goes to Hollywood.
And I am Mally Moore.
And this is the Silver Linings Playlist, a podcast that tries to find the silver lining in some of cinema's most bleak endings. Thank you for joining us. This is episode 3. If you're new to the podcast, this is a show where we take some movies that have some sad endings and we try to talk about them and try to find a silver lining at the end of it. Things that are, you know, a silver lining, a glimmer of hope at the end of everything. Today's episode is kind of a special one. For those of you who don't know, we kind of take turns picking what episode we're going to do. So this was Mally's suggestion.
Yes, it was. And I regret it already because I'm sad.
It's a good movie, though. I love it.
Oh, no. This is a great movie.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
So you can tell by the title, today's episode is, of course, 2010's Blue Valentine, directed by Derek Cianfrance.
Yes, actually, we had to look that up.
We had to look that up. It's starring Ryan Gosling, Baby Goose, and Michelle Williams. And I don't think he's much of a baby in this movie. He's kind of grown his wings.
Jeez.
At a budget of $3.5 million, only earned $12 million worldwide. But that's still, you know.
What do you mean only earned? That's like four times.
I'll say it's four times the gross. It's still pretty good. Certified fresh at 88%.
Too low.
Yeah, agreed.
It should be higher.
And nominated for an Oscar for Miss Michelle Williams, Best Performance by an Actress in a Leading Role.
Oh, I actually didn't know that.
Yep, I didn't either.
Oh, that's fantastic.
She's great. So let's go ahead and we'll listen to the trailer. You ready?
Ready when you are.
All right.
You got any, like, talents?
Like, hidden talents?
Can you dance? You can tap dance?
Can you?
No. Here, I'll play a song and you dance. Okay. I can't really sing. I have to sing goofy in order to sing. Like, I have to sing stupid. Okay?
Okay.
You always hurt the ones you love. The one you shouldn't hurt at all. You always stay and crush it until the petals fall. You always bring the kindest hearts, and with a hasty word you can.
You're actually good.
Recall. Slow dance to this part. And if I broke your heart last night, it's because I love you most.
So the trailer, if anybody knows anything about this movie, knows the ukulele song.
Yes.
And that's what the trailer is, you know, just playing the song. And we get glimpses of that scene as well as some images of not so happy times, images of happy times long gone.
And that is actually Ryan Gosling singing.
Agreed.
And shameless plug, if you haven't listened to his band, Dead Man's Bones, I highly recommend.
I haven't ever listened to
them. They
him.
Are
I know
fantastic.
About them, I haven't
listened to them. Well, one of their songs is actually in The Conjuring.
Oh, the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't know that. I think this is the best kind of trailer.
Oh, this, it's perfect.
I mean, it's one of the things I like about trailers like this is that they just take essentially a scene from the movie and they just let it play out. In this case, they kind of like lay over images of other scenes in the mm-hmm. movie, but I think it's great because it sets the tone, it introduces you to some characters, and it doesn't spoil the plot.
Yeah, if you just go into this movie after only seeing this trailer,
you don't get anything from this trailer.
You really don't.
That's, I mean, I like trailers like this, like that are similar to like Beast of No Nation did the same thing with their first trailer.
Right.
Black Mass with its first trailer at the table. That's such a great, those are great trailers.
I would watch the Black Mass trailer. I will watch all the time. I can't say the
same
for
the movie.
Yeah. But
that's, I wish that was like a more recurring trend with bigger movies.
I agree completely.
Okay, so are you ready, Mally, to discuss Blue Valentine and try to find a silver lining at the end?
I'm not ready, but let's do it.
All right. So what's your first impression of Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams' characters? Just right off the bat.
Oh, man.
Because we started the movie
and emotionally not prepared for any of this right now.
We started the movie in what is better known as the Not So Happy Times.
Yeah, I guess should we go past and present?
Yeah, we'll go through beat by beat and how the movie does it.
Okay.
So the first scene, we start off with little Frankie, mm-hmm. their daughter, looking for their dog Megan.
Yes.
And she can't find Megan, so she goes inside to wake her daddy up. That's Baby Goose.
Mm-hmm.
They go He's looking.
Putting in work in this movie too.
He's looking great.
Looking fantastic.
I hope that if I ever become like an alcoholic like that, I age that gracefully.
I think I'm slowly turning into Ryan Gosling in this movie, and I think it might be on purpose.
So yeah, little Frankie wakes up Ryan Gosling. They can't find the dog, so they go and decide to wake up the mom, Michelle Williams, who's sleeping.
And she is pissed.
She is very... Okay, two things about this. First off, my first impression of Ryan Gosling is he's a great dad.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. It's not about he's patient. He's playful with his kid.
Yeah, you can say he loves his daughter.
He loves her. And then, again, this is first impression, so... I think the mom's kind of an asshole.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong.
I'm not saying she's a bad mom, but she's definitely not as playful as Ryan is.
Yeah, it's kind of that like good cop, bad cop thing.
Yeah, but that's just first impressions. And mm-hmm. The second thing I want to say is this is one of the few times I completely sympathize and related to her. I hate being woken up. I hate when people ruin my sleep. My girlfriend does it to me every morning.
Yep.
I get woken up with her laying my son on me. Every morning I wake up and open my eyes and he's just staring me right in the face every morning. And I love my son. I love my girlfriend, but I hate waking up like that. If I'm sleeping, let me sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is, I do the opposite for her. I let her sleep. I tiptoe around the house. Not the case when I'm asleep. No, just complete disregard.
Yeah, man, I'm single and don't have kids, so I sleep like all the time.
But if someone wakes you up, it's not.
They're going to get punched in the throat.
It's not great. So they're getting Frankie ready. There's a little cute little scene where they're eating oatmeal and raisins off the table.
Like, is it let's eat it like panthers? Is that what it is? Or is it leopards?
I want to say leopard.
It's one of those two.
I don't think it's panther.
Which is what a strange animal to go
not
to.
Yeah, like an antelope or something.
Even like. Let's just eat it like a cat.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Jumping straight to cats.
That's a nice little scene.
That is. I love that little. I love every scene in this movie.
That's. Then we go to. What is Michelle Williams' character's name? I can't even remember.
Cindy.
We go to Cindy's.
Yeah,
Dean and Cindy. Which is funny because it's DC, which is Derek C. and France. It's his initials. Derek
Holy Cindy. Shit.
I don't think that was like on purpose, but it's not.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
So we go to Cindy's work and we're introduced to this doctor who immediately starts pumping out pervy vibes.
Yeah, this guy sucks.
Right. Well, at first, in your first impression, you're like, okay, he's kind of sleazy, but you don't really know why. And at the end of the film, when we come back to this office, you'll see why, but we'll get there when we get there. So he makes a comment, and we don't really know what he's talking about, but he's talking about her relocating.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we'll find out at the end that that's actually a job offer.
That comes back around.
Yeah. And Cindy doesn't seem too enthralled by this dude making moves on her.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
Well, let's go on to the next scene, where she's driving down the road. And we also get intercuts with Dean riding down the road as well, listening to music.
He's literally driving down the street. And what's the song he's listening to?
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know.
It's
some kind of like country song.
It's something.
Yeah.
Just drinking a beer while driving. That's like, a fun dude's time. Living the life.
Yeah, that dude has got to be.
Dude is living the life.
But I do know the song she's listening to because I think it's obviously, purpose foreshadowing. Where she's listening to Pat Benatar's We Belong Together.
And if you have never heard that song, turn this off.
Let's jam it, dude.
We might as well.
She's not listening to Mariah Carey's We Belong Together, though. I will say that.
Good.
But she's driving down the road, and We find out that Megan is dead on the side of the road.
Yeah, this is like this movie, there are a lot of moments where like they just rip your heart out and just stomp on it. This is the first one.
For the longest time, I had no idea what was happening in the scene because they don't really like give you like a shot of Megan.
Right.
And I was just like, why is she just pulling out on the side of the road?
Yeah.
And yeah. So yeah, we go
I don't deal well with animals.
Yeah. And so you know there's a website that you can look up to see if the dog in a movie dies. And I think it's literally called doesthedoglive.com.
Okay. Let's bookmark that.
And so, yeah, that website would obviously let you know, a little spoiler alert, that no, Megan does not make it out.
Now I'm sad again.
We cut to Dean is at a recital for Frankie.
Yep.
And Cindy is late showing up. But when she gets there, she informs Dean that she found Megan dead, and Dean lets us know that she was responsible for it because she didn't lock the gate.
Yeah,
for
that's
Megan's cage.
Some heavy shit.
So we already got a one-two punch for Cindy. She's got a pervy doctor hitting on her, and she's responsible for her daughter's dog dying.
Mm-hmm.
Also, callback, really early callback, but yes, it is doesthedogdie.com.
Sweet.
Yeah. Actually, I'm going to type in Blue Valentine real quick and just see if there's anything on it. Yep.
Yeah, of course. It has to be on there.
The family dog runs away and is later found dead on the side of the road, possibly having been hit by a car. They have a little number count, too, like how many dogs die in a movie.
Really?
For, like, this movie. It's obviously one, but...
Well, right. You know. Okay.
All
right.
So, Cindy has a little mini breakdown, I think, at the recital. She's kind of upset. And this is when we first start getting our flashbacks. Well, we'll say these are the happier times. And this is where we can see the intimacy between the characters.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean between Cindy and Dean. I mean just everybody. This is Dean talking to some of his coworkers at this moving company. And they're talking about...
Which, if no one's ever worked at a moving company, it sucks.
I never worked at a moving company.
It is literally some of the worst...
Is it accurately depicted in here where like they're strapping boxes to their backs?
No, they nailed it. It just sucks.
Well, that's a real moving company too, and I believe the other actors are all actual movers.
I believe you're right.
Yeah. But what I'm talking about with intimacy between characters, we see this between I don't know the guy's name, but the black gentleman that he's talking to, that Ryan Goose is talking to. And they're talking about the differences between men and women when it comes to romance. And I was looking for so long for a way to verbalize exactly what he says in this sentence. Well, in this little paragraph here. I'm going to read it real quick to you, okay? I mean, if you've seen the movie, you know what I'm talking about. But I think it's important just to read it as is and let it soak in a little bit. So, yeah, like I said, they're talking about the difference between men and women, romance, marriage, things like that. And Ryan Gosling says, talking about men, he says, "When we get married, we marry like one girl because we're resistant the whole way. Until we meet one girl and we think, I'd be an idiot if I didn't marry this girl. She's so great. But it seems like girls get to a place where they just kind of pick the best option. Oh, he's got a good job. I mean, they spend their whole life looking for Prince Charming and then they marry the guy who's got a good job and is going to stick around." Which, of course, that's not a blanket statement.
Right.
Like, it's not, you know, it's case by case. But I completely identify with that statement.
Oh, no. That's spot on.
I mean, I kind of agree that men are more romantic in the sense that we do hold out and we do wait for the one.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, and again, this might sound a little sexist, whatever, but I do think that most women do kind of.
We just had so many people unsubscribe.
let me explain first. I do think that a lot of women will try to make each guy they're with the number one. They try to make them, whereas guys kind of take it at face value. They're like, she's obvious. I'm not going to make her.
Right. Instead
my number one.
Excuse me. Instead of waiting for the one, they try to create the one.
The fixer-upper.
Right.
the classic fixer-upper. What do you think about this? About this scene? Does it resonate with you like it does with me?
Oh no, completely.
Yeah.
Like it just this entire movie hits me like a freight train every time I watch it. It's so real.
Yeah, it's so real. Like the way they talk and the language, the cadence, everything is, and that's how you would probably talk to somebody.
Oh no,
about
completely.
Like that, yeah.
Well, and I think like one of the biggest parts of it being so real is that I mean, most of the dialogue was improvised on set.
And that's what you need for a good drama or romance or something like that. It's improvisation.
It's actual chemistry between the characters.
I think Derek is the director. Derek San Francis is great at this type of movie.
I would love to get my hands on the script.
Yeah.
I would love to see the differences.
I think I have it, if I'm not mistaken. I know we're going to talk about this in the trivia section, but he went through a lot of drafts.
Oh, yeah. He worked on this for years.
Okay. So this is where Dean starts working at this moving company regularly. And I kind of like this. I mean, we kind of skipped it, but I kind of like the scene where he's in his interview and he's so casual and informal.
Yep.
And it's just like, do you have a car? He's like, I'll get here. That's my favorite part of that scene. He's like, I'll get here.
As someone who hasn't had a car in years, I completely relate to that. Because that is my response for most things.
Yeah. So Dean, we're introduced to old man Walter, and this is the older gentleman that Dean is
helping. The old man Walter scene.
I love old man Walter.
Old man Walter.
I think he says two words. I think he says thank you, and that's it. But he is awesome.
Well, just... I don't know. I almost can't explain it, but just it just adds so much to the Dean character. Mm-hmm. Watching him, like seeing how much he cares about just like decorating this old man's room.
He's a giving person.
Yeah, and like the other movers are just like, dude,
come
what
on,
are
we gotta
you
go.
Doing?
Yeah, what are
like,
you come on, we gotta go.
We have work to do.
Yeah,
and he's like, no. Let me nail all these matches to the wall.
Yep. It's not only get great characterization and giving you like character traits, but it's showing you how, like I said, intimacy. This whole movie is filled with intimacy, whether it's good or bad.
You really get to know Dean and Cindy almost too much.
Yeah. So he's helping Walter move, and Walter's house is like an episode of Hoarders when they get there.
Oh, yeah.
And Dean and the crew load up all of Walter's stuff, move him into, I'm assuming this is kind of like a retirement home, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume so.
Yeah. And, you know, like we said, the movers are like, come on, we gotta go to a new place. And Dean starts unboxing things and decorating this room for this guy. And then old man Walter comes in and gets to see what it looks like. And at first, I thought he might have been a little upset that he touched his stuff and everything, but... He comes in, he's looking around in shock, just like, holy shit, this looks great.
Yeah.
How nice of a guy to do this for me. And like I said, I just love the interaction between these two, because Baby Goose is so nice to him, and just, I don't want to tap myself on the back, but I feel like I talk to old people that way, especially older people like that. I just do. I love old people. I really do. Yeah. Unless they're the old school racist, you know, whatever. But I love old people.
Even they have their moments.
Moments. I would say moments. Very few and far between. But yeah.
This movie would have been so different if old man Walter just
said something about the black mover.
Yeah, this would have taken a weird turn.
Yeah. And then maybe Ryan Gosling just gets up the eyebrows. Like, what the fuck?
Those Gosling eyebrows, man. Because in these flashback scenes, Ryan Gosling looks like Ryan Gosling. Mm-hmm. He could charm anyone.
So damn charming. So charming.
Yes. Now, in the present scenes, he literally just looks like the director of this movie.
Yeah. So the one of the movers pays Ryan Gosling in cash and leaves it on Walter's nightstand.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's leaving, Dean takes a cash button in his pocket, and he realizes someone across the hall is watching him, which we'll come back to that. Because this is where the scene cuts. We don't get to see who he's looking at. So we cut to the not-so-happy times, the present day. Wouldn't you know it, Gosling's digging a hole to bury Megan. And I do know, I couldn't find this in the trivia section, but I know I've read this before, that the director actually had Gosling really dig that hole.
See, I thought that was right. Mm-hmm. I looked for that like trivia too, and because I'd heard that somewhere before.
I don't know if Gosling did it himself to get into character, or the director told him you have to do this, but he really did have to do it and bury the dog. And then we cut to, you know, him crying and Cindy consoling him, and that's him really crying. He said he broke down in tears and everything.
Again, this movie is too real.
I think it's all in the fucking direction, dude. Like, he knew how to get these people to do what he wanted them to do. It's just a masterclass, man.
At this point, I would just call the director a manipulator than anything else.
And then Gosling starts watching some old movies of Frankie and Megan when they were younger. And Sydney is just kind of oblivious to all of it. She's just kind of walking around cleaning a house.
Yeah.
Doesn't really care. And this is what I find that's weird. I this is my note.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree with this one.
He's watching home movies and then all of a sudden decides to book an appointment at a, which is basically a hotel for sex.
Yeah, no.
Which I don't even, what is this? You book a room based on a theme and fucking it? What do you,
yeah.
Is that a real thing?
No, yeah. Yeah, that's a real thing.
Obviously it's a real thing, but like, what kind of business model?
You have
model?
Not lived, sir.
I guess not. I've been fucked in the Cupid's room.
You're not talking to the right people, man.
Man. Okay. Is it like a regular motel and they just happen to have certain rooms?
It's like,
or?
Well, that, okay.
Is it a tourist thing?
I feel like you don't usually see, do they ever state where this takes place?
I don't think so.
Is it?
I'm assuming
it's
up
New
north,
York.
I believe. Outskirts of New York, maybe.
Yeah, because I think he works in the city.
Yeah.
But I think it actually takes place in the outskirts.
Yeah, like the outskirts of the city. Yeah.
Yeah, no, like in New York or like Vegas or something like that. You would like. They definitely have these like themed hotels.
All right. You say so. All right, so. Sydney and Dean go to this grocery store where Sydney goes in to get alcohol for their trip, and she bumps into
Mike Vogel,
who is playing Bobby. Now we get from a little like subtlety, a little subtext that these two had a relationship at some point.
Yeah, we're not shown, but it's
not yet
hinted at.
A lot. This movie does a lot of things where it shows you things and then gives you the backstory later, so you kind of connect with it. But
Well, I guess tells you things.
Yeah. Bobby kind of subtly makes a move on her, and she's a little taken aback and decides to just leave. Then they get back in the car, and he's driving, and she tells Dean, you know, I bumped into this guy in the store.
And Dean is
not happy.
Pissed.
Yeah, she's upset. So as he's kind of berating her or whatever, they pull her on the side of the road, and she says she's getting a pee. And they're just on the side of the road, which I don't know. I guess this hotel is very far out that they've got to make a whole trip out of it. But she ends up crying in the woods, basically. And then we going back to happier times. And this is I don't get. Okay, I get what's happening, but I don't get one little thing. So we're going back to when Cindy was in college.
Right.
And she's going to visit her boyfriend, who's Bobby.
Yeah.
Who's a wrestling athlete.
Whatever you want to call it.
But she's in a wheelchair.
Yes.
Now, I get that after this scene, she goes to see her grandmother, who is in the wheelchair. So I'm assuming she's bringing her the wheelchair.
Right.
But why is she walking around, strolling around campus on this wheelchair acting like a paraplegic?
Why the fuck not?
I mean, I guess if you want to get places quicker and... thought of it, I guess.
So if you're telling me if there was a wheelchair right here, you wouldn't sit around and just go for a stroll in it.
I'd probably sit around and do this podcast like mobile. Like just
that's what I'm saying. She had a wheelchair. Let's assume she's taking the wheelchair to her grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Is it the same wheelchair? Because I didn't look. I mean,
I'll get back to you on that.
Not a wheelchair.
No idea. So let's assume she's taking the wheelchair there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's going to go visit him first. She's got to get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why walk when you got a set of wheels?
I guess. I feel it's a little insulting to me, but
well, I mean,
if no one knows, whatever.
I mean, she's kind of, you know, she's a, I guess kooky. Would that be the word I would want to use?
I don't even know what the word is. I guess this is the best you can go for.
She's a young, you know, 20-something-year-old. Yeah, like, you know, we do silly things on occasion. So I'm just going to chalk it up to that.
I love that when she first sees her boyfriend and, you know, she's in the wheelchair, he calls her a quadriplegic. And then she corrects him.
She's
like, no, I'm a paraplegic. I wouldn't be able to use my arms. So, like, that just proves that he's just a fucking meathead, dude.
Yeah. Like, it's that point where you're like, this guy's an idiot.
Mm-hmm. So we cut to a scene where Cindy is eating dinner with her mom and dad and their grandmother. And for some reason, I don't know why this has to be in the movie, but for some reason, Cindy's dad is like an angry, I'm assuming drunk. Maybe.
Yeah, I believe so.
Maybe that's supposed to mirror kind of what Dean ends up being.
I think so.
But yeah, he just flips out for whatever reason. I think it's great because he's like, are we supposed to eat this shit? It looks like a decent meal to me.
Yeah, that's...
And then he like flips the table, the plate, and the mom even asked her, like, do you want me to make you some eggs?
Or right. Well, is that a play on, like, the whole, like, because I know for guys, it's always like, you know, like, oh, guys marry a girl that's similar to their mother.
Yeah.
So I guess, I mean, is it similar to, like, a girl marries a guy that's similar to her father?
See, that you never hear that one.
Yeah, you don't hear that one. But does it, I mean, does it work both ways like that?
Well, maybe that's the whole, where the whole, you know, cliche thing about daddy issues.
Right.
Maybe that's where that comes from. I don't know. Again, I'm not speaking a blanket statement for women because I'm not one, so I'll never know. But that's what I'm assuming based on what this movie's telling me.
Right.
So this is where we cut back to the happier times, and we get to see who Baby Goose was looking at when he was taking his money off of Walter's counter. He sees Cindy across the hall in the room where her grandmother's staying, and Sydney thinks that Ryan Gosling is stealing money from Walter because all she sees is a guy taking cash from this old man.
Right.
So Ryan Gosling goes across the hall, knocks on the door, and they have a little conversation with the door cracked open. And
God, I love this scene.
It's such a good meet cute. Like the whole.
Oh yeah, completely.
What's your name? Go away. That's a weird name or something like that. But he gives her his business card. Which do movers have business cards? Like
biggest suspension of disbelief of all time.
Well, let me ask you: did you have a business card with your name on it?
Hell no.
Or did you keep the business card, like the actual company's business card?
Yes, but my name was nowhere on it.
Mm-hmm. That's like that scene in Silver Linings playbook where the cop leaves and says, here's my card. And
right.
Bradley Cooper's like, what kind of police officer has a business
card? Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is.
All right, so we end up in the future room, this sex hotel the not so happy times. And this is one of my favorite scenes from the movie, just because it's so stupid, it makes me laugh.
There's not a single window in this hotel room.
And it's, yeah.
And that creeps me out, man.
And it seems like the siding is like aluminum.
Yeah.
Like, it's really weird, but
the future looks like it's gonna suck.
I love that Ryan Gosling lays on the bed, puts a rose in between his teeth, and it's like, this is how we laugh in the future. And then he calls Frankie, and that's the first thing he says. Frankie, this is how people laugh in the future.
Yeah. Like, he's like, oh, my wife doesn't think it's funny. Let me call my daughter. She'll appreciate it.
I fucking love it.
And he calls his daughter from a sex hotel.
Yep. Yep. And that's the first thing he says, too. He's like, Frankie, let me tell you how they laugh in the future. See, Lord. That's again, he's a great dad. He's so playful with her.
Yes.
He's not even like, hi, this is daddy. You know, how you doing? Blah, just straight to the jokes. I think it's great. But then this gets intercut again with the happier times, the past, and actually this in particular
is not so happy on this one.
Yeah, not so happy. We find out that Dean goes back to Walter's because he made a locket for him that's got his wife's photo in it, his deceased wife, and Walter, a younger picture of Walter as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes back and turns out Walter's room has been cleaned out, and Walter's nowhere to be found, so it's obviously implied that old man Walter has passed away.
Yeah.
So
again, just rips your heart out, stomps on it.
Mm-hmm. And Ryan Gosling goes across the hall and knocks on Cindy's grandmother's door and inquires about the blonde that was there before. Grandma doesn't give him really any hope. But Baby Goose catches the bus, and when you know it, Cindy happens to be on the bus. And yeah. It's pretty great because the bus is nearly empty, and he approaches her and says, "You know, can I have this seat? All the other seats are taken." And she's kind of just ignoring him, just like whatever. She's not interested in him. But he makes a comment. I don't remember exactly how this comment comes up organically, but he says pretty much that the prettier a girl is, the more nuts they are. So you must be psychotic or something.
Oh,
like
insanely
that.
Accurate too.
Very charming too. Like, it just unreal. Like, that line would never work for me. People would think I'm a psycho.
The hot crazy scale.
It's the beard, the eyes. No, yep. No one would. Yeah, I would get called immediately off that bus.
But it's Ryan Gosling. God, he can get away
charm.
With it.
Infinite charm. They talk about jokes, and Cindy tells this joke about a child molester, which is a pretty dark joke.
It's a bold move.
I thought it was funny.
Oh, it's hilarious. It's
greatly offensive, but...
Well, I mean most good jokes are.
Yeah, that's a good point. And Ryan Gosling seems like he doesn't want to laugh, but I think he breaks character here and he does laugh.
Yeah, a little bit.
And they just decided to keep that take. And of course, they get off. They kind of connect a little bit. They get off the bus, and this is where they have the dancing ukulele
the
scene. Scene from the trailer.
Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Anyone can come at me, argue with me. I don't care. This scene is perfect.
So he's really playing the ukulele, and he's really singing.
And it's just so. And like it was.
It's another cute moment.
And again, it was completely improvised. Yep.
And it's the like here's your candy before I rip it away from you kind of moment.
Because like they were told like to keep like their talents like
yep, that's in my trivia
secret. Oh, it's so good.
It's a great scene. And it's all a winner for the most part.
Yeah.
All right. We cut back to it's still heartbreaking. We cut back to present day, mm-hmm. and they're drinking in the sex room, and they're having this conversation about potential.
Yeah.
And anyone who knows me knows I am strongly on the side of Cindy in this conversation. I actually made a blog post about it a couple weeks back about wasting potential, which, granted, it's a case-by-case thing, but, you know, she's basically saying, you're a house painter. Don't you want more out of life? You know, and you have so much potential. You can draw. You can sing. All these things. And he makes this comment of potential for what? What is there potential for? To make money? You know. Where do you stand on this, Matt? Do you think that if you have potential, squander it? Or
okay, I literally had like verbatim, basically had this conversation with someone I'm close with a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I was Dean in the scenario.
Really?
And she was Cindy, and that's like that conversation is literally how I ended up down here.
Yeah.
So I guess the way it differs from this movie is that, you know, I saw, I guess, the light. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw that, you know, I was wasting my potential, so, you know, I changed it. Whereas Dean is much more argumentative.
And he's got his points, but again, you don't have to do what you enjoy doing or things you're good at just to make money.
Like, right. No.
I'm not in this business to make money. No. I genuinely want to make movies.
I'm here to party.
Yeah, money will come. I mean, I'm not worried about that. I just want to make good movies. That's all I want to do.
No, for sure.
And that's why I kind of side with Cindy on this. But again, you know, it's an interesting dynamic, the struggle between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just driving a wedge further and further in between them. I love this comment because she makes a comment saying, you know, I wish you didn't have a job where you had to drink at 8 in the morning to go to it. And he makes a comment, which I love.
So good.
I have a job where I can drink at 8 in the morning. It's a luxury. And that is a luxury.
I used to
do this too. You used to work third shifts. Yep. And would you not possibly have a drink when you got off work at like 5 or 6 in the morning?
Of course I would.
I would get off around like 6 or 7 in the morning.
Yep.
Have a drink, go to bed, wake up, go to class.
Yep.
It is a luxury. It's great to have a drink when the sun's coming up. It's awesome. So this scene,
we might be terrible people.
I know, we've already talked about like sexism and now day drinking while driving. This movie is really opening.
Yeah, we're gonna have
doors.
To rethink this.
We don't advocate any of the illegal or offensive stuff.
Yeah, totally.
This scene is the pinnacle of
where it all starts going downhill. But this movie started going downhill the moment it started.
Dean kind of makes this offhanded comment as he's kind of trying to put the moves on Sydney, and they're both drunk.
Yep.
That he wants to have another baby. He kind of whispers it to her. Whatever. He asks her. He's like, "Do you want to have another baby with me? I want to have another baby with you." And this scene turns really weird really quick. They start, you know, having sex, but it kind of turns into almost a rapey scene.
Yes, it does.
And he, you know, she's kind of making this motion. She's kind of hitting him, and she's kind of hinting that she wants her to hit him, and he refuses to. And what's really weird is we get this kind of intercut with not necessarily the first time Dean and Cindy had sex, but this is where the NC-17 rating came from, where it gets intercut with the cunnilingus sex scene between her and Dean, and it's just polar opposites, like total contrast, and it's very upsetting. You know what? We've got to mention something before we get this to the next part, but we get in a flashback that Bobby and Sydney had unprotected sex, and you know, now she turns out she's pregnant.
Yep.
While she's meeting Dean and dating Dean.
Yeah. That was pivotal. How did we skip over that?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I was so invoked in the movie, I forgot to take notes of that.
Sorry, guys.
This is where we get the bridge scene. This scene, again, we'll get to the trivia with this, but improvised.
Perfect.
Improvised. Totally improvised. The bridge scene, Sydney and Dean, this is back in the happier times. Well, quote, well, now it's getting almost blurring the lines. Sydney and Dean are walking along this bridge, and Sydney's acting weird. Dean makes a comment, and you know he can tell he's keeping something from her, so he threatens to jump off the bridge, essentially. Climb the fence and jump over. And she reveals to him that she's pregnant. And he asks if it's his, and she kind of doesn't really answer.
Yeah.
And they kind of hint at, he kind of hints at, I don't want to say he suggested, but he kind of hints at the idea of an abortion, or asking her, are you going to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
And she doesn't say anything. And then, you know, she starts, he walks away, and he just releases his anger out on that fence. It's pretty great. I love it.
Again, love just, it. Oh, so good.
I want to say this is the part where she tries to have the abortion, but just can't do it.
Yeah,
she just couldn't do it, and Dean is just kind of like, all right, so here's a character that has fallen in love with this girl. Turns out she's pregnant. It's not his, or at least it's insinuated that it's not his. We never find out for sure. And agrees to stay with her anyway. You know, take care of a kid that's not his. And I have to say, different circumstances, but I'm in the same situation.
Yes, you are. Dude, you're Ryan Gosling.
God, dude, this is the closest anyone would ever compare me to Ryan Gosling. My girlfriend had a daughter that was a little over a year old when I first met her, and an absent father, same situation. Mm-hmm. I decided to take up and be her father, and I still am. She's not dead or anything. So we have, and then we have our own son together, so we have two children together. And yeah, this, it's a totally different world. It's, I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm patting Ryan Gosling on the back in this case. It's a totally selfless act. It's a noble act. It's great. It's fantastic.
Well, I know at one point there were talks because they filmed the past scenes, took a break, and then filmed the later scenes.
Yep.
I know there were talks about them just
not even shooting
the later scenes.
That's in my trivia section. Yep.
Let's just go with this. And that would, like, as much as I love this movie, like I would have watched that because like just that story is so good.
What if it was a two-parter? What if we had the happier scenes as one movie and then the darker scenes as separate?
You know,
It'd be like going from the Philosopher's Stone up to Deathly Hallows Part 2.
Yeah, just skipping everything in between.
Yep. So, Bobby finds out about Dean.
Yeah.
And this is, I guess, where like he's the crazy ex-boyfriend that can't let it go. And him and his crew decide to jump Dean at his work. And
Cindy tries to call him, but
it's so heartbreaking.
He's got headphones on. He can't hear the phone ringing.
The phone's ringing the whole time in this warehouse while he's getting his ass. And there's no one else around.
No, it's just like in the warehouse. Like he's out there by himself. And what is there? It's Bobby plus two of his friends, right?
Bobby and two of his friends. Yeah. Bobby's the only one I think that jumps him. And the two just kind of stand around, but still.
But, that's so. And so
Bobby gets his shit pushed in, basically.
Yeah. And you, like, the whole, like, because at the beginning when we were first introduced, like, you don't really understand why Dean's so upset.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
about Bobby in the car, yeah.
And, I mean, now you know.
Yep. And this is where Dean has dinner for the first time with Cindy's parents. And you can kind of see that at least the father figure doesn't really care for him that much.
Yeah.
But the mom doesn't really ever give you a feel for it.
She seems a little more like sympathetic towards him because they dig in, like Dean goes on about like his past, like
he reveals he didn't graduate,
right?
His mom left at a young age, I believe, and I don't remember what he says about his dad. Oh, his dad's a janitor.
That's right.
A janitor, and he's proud of it. And I love that.
Yeah,
no reason to be ashamed.
He owns where he came from. Yeah.
And I love that his reasoning for dropping out of school was something like, there was nothing for me there or something like that. It's so great. This is where he also introduces their song that we heard. We kind of skipped over that part too, but we heard the quote unquote their song mm-hmm. in the sex room. And this is the first time where we're introduced to it, or that he introduces it to Cindy. Right. And then we cut back to, so this is like almost the last little bit of happier times we get.
Yeah.
Before we cut back to present day, Sydney leaves Dean at this sex hotel.
She gets called into work.
Mm-hmm, and he's drunk and passed out. So she just leaves him there. Takes a car and leaves him there without a way to get home and just goes to work. So we find out more about this doctor. This doctor's offer is basically, hey, I have another practice up in another state, and I want you to come with. You can maybe get an apartment, stay here, work for this amount of time, go back to your family, stuff like that. And it's obviously, he even says it. He propositions her and then kind of takes it back. Like, I didn't mean for that. But
he's like, you know, we can get dinner and, hang out on the weekends.
He definitely meant for that to be a proposition.
Oh, yeah, completely.
So Dean shows up to the doctor's office drunk.
Yes, and rocking just the coolest sweater of all time, by the way. God, the
American Eagle.
Yeah.
The receptionist there makes a comment. He's like, I'm here to see Cindy. And she says, oh, you must be Dean, as if Cindy's just trash-talking
it's implied that, Dean's never really come around. Mm-hmm. Like, the coworkers don't know him.
But Cindy, but they know him based on what Cindy's
they've heard enough about
and it's
him.
It's not good. So Dean is, kind of lashes out at Cindy, and I almost want to say rightfully so if he wasn't drunk. I mean, she did leave him there.
Right, like if he came at this...
Sober? Maybe.
Right, like it would still...
It wouldn't be a good situation to do it at work.
It's a conversation that needs to take place, maybe not the right setting.
Yeah.
Maybe don't do it at her place of employment.
Not at all. So they start, arguing, whatever, and... Cindy wants to go outside. She doesn't want to be around him. And she even asks him, she's like, can you drive? Even though he's clearly drunk. And she gives him the car keys. And he even makes a comment. He's like, you don't give a fuck if I die in a car wreck if I'm too drunk to drive.
Right.
And she goes back inside, and Dean decides to follow her. And this is where... Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Before they exit outside, the receptionist makes a comment to Cindy saying, don't let him brainwash you. But they don't even know...
Right. They only know what she's told
them. They don't even know the guy. Right. They're literally seeing him at his worst.
Yeah.
Which is, first impressions mean everything. I mean, we clearly saw that at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
But still, it's just... Ugh. So anyway, Cindy goes back inside the daughter's office, and Dean comes in and follows, and they kind of go to like this room, this, I don't know, like a break room, and they just start having this argument. And this is where Cindy reveals to him, and she even says, and I'm quoting, that she is so out of love with him and that he is the bad guy.
Yep.
Let's break this down.
Oh, God.
You are given virtually, I won't say virtually because there's probably little things here and there, but virtually no reason why he's the bad guy. Maybe this is just some stuff in between the happier times and the not so happy times that we missed out on.
Yeah, that's the thing. We get the beginning
of the relationship.
And,
10 years, maybe a little.
Kind of.
It can't even be because Frankie.
It's, I think, 6 years.
6 years? So he goes downhill quick.
Yeah.
Maybe something happened then.
Yeah, so we only get the beginning and the end. We don't see what happened in the middle.
How he kind of fell down.
Yeah, and I have, something. I know there's. I don't know. We'll get into it once we wrap up the summary here. I'll get into what I think about
it. That's just such a devastating line to hear, especially from someone you're married to for that long, someone whose kid you're taking care of. That's
someone
not yours.
Literally telling you, I am not out of in love with you.
Not even that, but you're the bad guy.
Yeah, it's like I don't love you anymore, and it's your fault.
I mean, it's different if you tell someone, I don't want to be in a relationship with you anymore, and then you feel like the bad guy. I mean, that's happened to me before.
Oh, no,
I've obviously been the reason for a lot of my breakups. Mm-hmm. However, I take with that, that was my fault. But to have someone point it out, it's like double whammy, like to the gut. You're just like, well, fuck.
Yeah, she's not taking any of the blame on that.
She's completely done. She hates him at this point. It's just done. And they start having another argument, you're yelling, and then the doctor comes in, and Dean, we find out that this doctor has been emailing Cindy.
Yep.
And this is so great, because Dean gives him a warning, saying, I'm going to punch you in 5 seconds. And he literally counts down from five, and the guy just doesn't, ignores him, and he punches him right square in the face, and even makes a comment because the dude falls down. He's like, what, you got a glass jar or something? But you can't take one punch without passing. I loved it. That was great.
Like, if someone tells you, they're like, in 5 seconds, they're going to hit you.
They're not joking.
Maybe step away from that situation.
Maybe they're not. Maybe they are joking, but when they actually start counting down, they get close to one, maybe you should fucking just
take a step back, get out of swinging range.
I would have hit him. I mean, if you're emailing my wife and making propositions, I'm going to hit you. He gave him the courtesy, the decency of giving him a warning.
Yeah, no, he warned him. He gave him the countdown. Mm-hmm. I blame the doctor.
So Sydney gets fired from her job for causing this ruckus.
Because the doctor fires her because he can't take a warning.
Yep, basically.
Dick.
And they head outside and Sydney just tells him, I want a divorce.
Yeah.
So Dean, you know, takes his wedding ring off, throws in the woods, and they start heading home. Which is odd that they head home together in the car, which I figured like this, I wouldn't want to be anywhere near you.
I mean, that's...
He had no problem taking a cab any other time.
How many times has that... Like, that's happened to me where I had, like, a major argument, and then, you know, we've had to continue on with our life. Weird.
Is this... Do we only see him driving once with the beer can at the beginning? Because I think he's in the passenger seat every other scene.
You might be right, actually.
It's weird.
I don't know.
But this is weird. He throws his wedding ring out into, like, the little grassy area in the parking lot, and then they both go looking for it.
Yeah.
Do they find it? Why does she care? Why does he care at this point? Why are they looking for it? Is he trying to maybe, like, rekindle things? Or, like, maybe there's hope?
I think it was a spur of the moment. It was a very spur-of-the-moment thing. Like, I mean, there's, like, especially in arguments, like, you'll just yell something out, and then immediately you're just like, I should not have said that.
Yeah.
I think this is similar. Like, he, out of frustration, he just throws the ring, and he's like, shit.
Yeah.
And he goes back and looks for it.
Man. So, yeah. We get this, you know, we go to the grandfather's house where Frankie is, and Dean locks him out of his own house so they can have him and Sydney can have a conversation.
Such a nice little touch.
Such a great scene. I wish we never saw that guy again. It was just implied he died.
Yeah.
Not having oxygen.
Because he does the little line, like, you can't lock me out here. My oxygen's
oxygen. This scene is juxtaposed with Sydney and wedding Dean's scene. Marriage.
Yeah.
Which is like this nice little quaint little wedding inside this little, almost like the office, like a...
Let's say, I think it's just like a
probate
office. It's just like a courthouse marriage, courtroom, isn't it? Yeah.
He's got the sweet little blue tux on. Yeah. It's pretty great.
Man, I love that tux he's wearing.
And this, like I said, it's intercut with the present day. So this is where he's like, he makes a comment. He's like, you know, we have a little girl to think about. It's not just us breaking up. And then he breaks down into tears, which is still gut-wrenching. So fucking gut-wrenching.
Well, and like, that's like, there's no right one to side with in this, because he's like, you know, do you want our daughter to grow up in a broken home? Yeah. And she's like, well, do you want our daughter to grow up with two people that hate each other?
Yeah.
And
this is only time where you can side with one or the other. And I feel like for the most movie, you're siding with Ryan Gosling. I really don't, maybe it's just me, but I didn't see any redeeming quality in Sydney until this point. And this is the only thing she literally says, what you said, do you want her to grow up hating each other? Do you want her to grow up in a home, you know, whatever, a broken home?
And yeah,
this you kind of make your side, and I still side with Dean on that one. I mean, I side with Dean for minor reasons. Sydney's definitely in the right. You definitely don't want to stay together.
Completely.
But at the same time, we'll get to this with the silver lining, but I think they're fixable. I really do.
I think they are.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like Cindy is more of the, I guess, the logical one in terms of the way she thinks, whereas Dean is
driven by the heart.
Yeah, pure emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the whole movie is those two things clashing.
So the film ends with Dean kind of just walking off. I don't want to say into the sunset, because he kind of walks off into fireworks.
Like, yeah, at the end of the street, there's people lighting off fireworks.
I don't know if that's... I mean, I get what... It's there for the end credits sequence where we get fireworks exploding and then montage of photos of them together. But I really don't know why there's fireworks there. Maybe it was just something happening on the street and the director's like, fuck it, production value. So yeah, Dean kind of just walks off. Frankie runs after him and he tells her, go back to your mom, and that's
that scene is hard. He like tricks her into running back because he's like, we'll race. And he's like, all right, 1, 2, 3, go.
And then she goes.
And she runs and he just
walks off.
Keeps
like, and you hear Frankie crying off. Too in her mom's arms.
Yeah, like, so she runs back to Cindy and like Cindy picks her up and you can hear her just being like, oh, I love him. Mm-hmm. And it's,
that's it.
God.
We go to black, man. That's the end of the movie. Fuck your emotions, dude. fuck your romance story. Jesus. This is it.
Yeah, that's the one thing about that the trailer for this film. As much as I love it, this is not a love story.
Nope.
It's not. It's a story.
Yep, about love.
Yes.
Tagline for a famous movie. But we'll get to the silver linings here in a minute. Let's talk about some trivia first about the movie. So the film was originally set to shoot in the spring of 2008, but was delayed due to Heath Ledger's death. And this is because Michelle Williams was Heath Ledger's girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And they had a daughter together named Matilda. So, you know, the producers and director delayed the film out of respect for her. And rather than going ahead and shooting the film with another actress, because they really wanted Michelle.
Yeah.
Michelle
Williams. Yeah, and she was perfect in this.
She's Oscar nominated.
And Gosling was perfect as well. Mm-hmm. Like, if anyone says Ryan Gosling is not a good actor, they have obviously not seen this film.
Yep, agreed. According to director Derek Cianfrance, after shooting the first part of the love story, you know, we talked about this, there were serious discussions about not doing the second one and just retitling the movie Valentine. This is the right move. I mean, it's a great case study in, like, how do you make a love story versus how do you make an anti-love story.
Like, I'm sure if they'd done that, it still would have been a good movie, but I don't think it would have had the...
impact.
Like emotional impact as that this did.
Derek spent 12 years making this movie. He started working on the script in 1998, and he said that he wrote about 67 drafts, but mostly each draft was just containing content either being added or modified, like things based on the set on the onset improvisation. So he was making changes during the shooting of it. And while he was doing that, while he was shooting documentaries in order to raise funding for this movie. And we talked about this. The MPAA originally wanted to give the movie an NC-17, but after public allegations of using a double standard to rate portrayals of sex on screen, the organization agreed to hear an appeal, and upon the review, they unanimously agreed that the film should receive an R rating.
Well, and I know Ryan, there was a great quote from Ryan Gosling about that, too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, there's been how many movies that show a girl going down on a guy and it's fine.
There's this weird standard
but where... But then you flip it around and, you know, we get the NC-17.
It's a weird standard where for some reason there's some kind of rule that's like you can't show women having an orgasm on screen.
Yeah.
Which is really stupid because how many times have you seen dudes come in their jeans, you know what I mean?
Countless times. wait, are we talking about real life or in movies?
Or real movies versus... they said that, you know, if they kept the NC-17 rating, you know, it could have been the first NC-17 rated movie to get an Oscar nomination because of Michelle Williams.
Right.
It would have broken some ground. That would have been great. Oh, I'm sorry. Since Henry and June did in 1990. Because Henry and June was NC-17 and was Oscar nominated.
Oh, that's right.
Derek accelerated the relationship's corrosion by starting off-screen fights between the actors while they were living together. So he had Ryan and Michelle set up in this apartment to live together for a month. Yeah,
this one is
crazy. This is almost Kubrick level, like, directing.
This
he told Ryan,
kind of weird.
He told Ryan Gosling that, you know, one night when they were, because they slept in separate bedrooms, Ryan and Michelle did, but he told Ryan, you know, to try and go into her bedroom and try to make love to her, just to see if they can kind of, like, build on this idea of their relationship falling apart. But you know, Gosling was like, hell no, and then just slept on the couch instead. Michelle Williams, Ryan Gosling, and Faith, I can't pronounce her last name, but
Frankie, that the daughter? Okay.
They did actually live in the house together, and it was in Pennsylvania for 30 days. It said that the couple struggled with the real stresses of having to share a bathroom together, do the dishes 3 times a day, which, who does the dishes 3 times a day? I do them like once every 3 days.
I'm lucky to do mine once every 3 weeks.
Yeah. They had a grocery budget based on Dean's salary as a house painter and Cindy's as a nurse, which this number cannot be right.
Yeah, no, this seems stupidly low.
This apparently their grocery budget was $200 every 2 weeks, which maybe they're taking into account they have to pay rent and everything on their salary and things like that.
So the $200 is just groceries.
I'm assuming so.
I mean, because that can't be like
I would say total. That with my family, you know, there's me, my girlfriend, and our two kids. We spend about $600 in a month and, well, about a month. So $200 every 2 weeks is stressful because that's
yeah.
like, four, well, I don't know. It's low. You're not eating steak dinners at night.
No, not at all.
Gosling said that it was hard for him and Williams at the end of living together to take their wedding bands off their prop wedding bands.
I can imagine that.
The scene, we talked about this too, the scene where Dean threatens to jump off the bridge while climbing the fence to get Sydney to confess what was wrong wasn't in the script. Ryan Gosling had to find a way to let Michelle Williams' character reveal her pregnancy.
Yeah, that was a great improv on his part.
So she didn't know he was going to try and jump over this bridge. So
yeah, like because he was told to get her to reveal it
anyway,
and she was told do her best to resist.
Mm-hmm. And that's how you direct.
Yeah,
that is how you direct. This is like a masterclass in directing drama.
Yes, it is.
Last little bit of trivia here. It's so
is this
out
true?
There. Yes, it's really? So out there, but I love it. It has nothing to do with the movie itself, but Sydney's car in the movie has a Pennsylvania license plate of CHT8635, and apparently this is the same license plate on the car driven by Jim Halpert.
Wait,
so
does this take place in Pennsylvania? Were we completely off base with that whole New York thing?
It's possible, because, I mean, they share an apartment, you know, off camera in Pennsylvania. Maybe they did shoot in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
I mean, I'm sure it was probably cheaper than shooting in New York.
I'm sure.
That's sorry, close. Guys. I mean, I said up north, so
yeah, close enough.
All right, Mally.
We're in Florida. Everything's up north.
Yeah. The whole reason we're here. What is the silver lining for Blue Valentine? I'll let you go first. Do you have one?
I don't. I'm not going to lie.
This is episode 3, and we already don't.
I don't have one. I just...
There's no kind of glimmer of hope at the end of this.
There is. Okay, let me think of how to word this. So this is what I was getting into a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The whole conflicting ideals of Dean and Cindy. So I hope this makes sense when I say it out loud. Dean doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, like
he doesn't really have an
yes,
arc.
He gets he his hair gets balding and all stuff, but his emotionally, Dean doesn't grow.
Mm-hmm.
He's the same like romantic person he is in the flashback as he is in the present.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe he's a little more drunk in the present scenes, but he's that same kind of. He believes in romantic love.
Right.
Where, again, going back to logic versus emotion,
mm-hmm.
Cindy does grow. Like, she becomes, you know, Dean stuck in that, like, emotional field he was in, where she kind of grows up, I guess. She matures, and he doesn't.
So, your silver lining is that they grow emotionally, mentally...
I don't even think that's still a silver lining because that's still kind of depressing.
Well, it's an experience. You could say they had an experience that changed them more or less for the better.
Right. Yeah. Well,
that's a silver lining. I mean, that's the whole point of the word lining. Silver filling. It's a silver lining.
So, well, I mean, in the way the movie leaves off, like you don't know. Is the relationship over? Mm-hmm. Maybe. But is there still a seed there for it to grow?
And
absolutely.
That's what my silver lining is. My silver lining is that not all breakups are bad.
Right.
You don't, even if it seems like it in the moment and you hate each other or one person is hurt and the other person is, you know, content with the breakup, that's not always a bad thing.
No.
And it doesn't always mean that it's over permanently. Things can rekindle. I've got a friend now who, not a friend, it's actually my brother. He dated, well, my brother's my friend.
Yeah.
He dated this girl he knew in high school, and they were high school sweethearts for years, and then broke up, and they had a kid together at the time, and you know now they're not together. Well, they weren't together for a long mm-hmm. period of time, but now they're together again. They're married. They've been married for years. They have another child together, and they're living Yeah. Fine. So breakups can happen. Those are sad. This movie leaves you with an ambiguous, I would say it's, for, you know, you can argue with me on this, but it's ambiguous that they break up or not.
Oh, yeah. No,
I mean, it's implied heavily. But yes. Until I see divorce papers, nope. No, they didn't break up as far as I'm concerned. So things can get better. And not only that, now that they've been to their worst moments, which Dean even says, this is me at my worst. You said for better or for worse, this is me at my worst. Maybe that they've admitted that. They've come to the head of what their real problems are together. Maybe things can be worked out.
Well, and contrary to what she says, the whole, I'm so out of love with you.
I don't buy it.
That was a heat of the, like him throwing the wedding ring. That was a heat of the moment type situation.
Yeah. Her saying that's a heat of the moment.
Exactly.
Because from what we see, he has done nothing wrong in this movie. For me, at least. I saw nothing
I won't say he's done nothing wrong. Because, I mean, obviously, because I think it goes back to that whole maturity thing. He's, you know, he's always going to be the guy we see in the past is the same guy, you know, we see in the present. Mm-hmm, whereas, more or less. She, like, you know, she kind of, you know, she matures and he doesn't. Like,
yeah.
I keep repeating myself on that, but that's just, that's how I see this movie. But I mean, going back to what you said about not all breakups are a bad thing. Like, I know myself, like, I've been through countless breakups or whatever that, you know, when they happened, it was, you know, some of the worst, like, it felt like the worst thing that could ever happen. But I look back on it now, it's like, well, that shaped me into who I am today.
Exactly.
Like, that's, if I had not gone through that, I wouldn't be where I'm at now.
100%.
And so, I mean, I definitely never want this movie to be made, but let me throw out a Blue Valentine too. Let me see where they're at now. Mm-hmm. Let me get like a 10-minute epilogue. Let me know where they're at.
There you go. So we always like to give you an alternative. This movie obviously has a sad ending or a downer ending, as all our movies do. So what's an alternative? What's a movie someone should watch after they watch Blue Valentine to kind of get them back in the swing of things and not leaving everything on such a sour note?
This is actually something I do every time I watch Blue Valentine. Within a day or two, I always end up watching this movie because I need that pick me up. Crazy Stupid Love. Let's keep that Ryan Gosling train going.
Not only that, that movie starts off with a breakup.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost reversed.
And actually, it starts out with a breakup, and they're actually back together by the end of it.
There you go. See, not all breakups are bad.
Boom.
Proven silver lining theories already.
I'm going to watch that tonight, actually.
It's a good movie.
Anyway, yours.
Sir. My pick me up, and we actually already mentioned the tagline for it.
Yep.
It's a movie about love, but it's not a love story. I'm pitching 500 Days of Summer.
Yeah.
Deschanel and Levitt together having this
great movie.
This is such a good movie. You know, he falls in love with this girl and they break up.
Again, not all breakups are a bad thing.
He ends up learning a lesson, you know. Yep. Just you can't force someone to be in love with you, and once you can't fall in love with the first person you see, which is funny because the way that movie ends. But
yeah.
That's a great movie. It's funny. It definitely will give you, you know, high hopes, and it proves our theory that breakups aren't always bad.
Right.
That breakups can be a good thing. Man. All right, so we always forget to do this. Clue for next week's episode. Do you want to give one? Do you remember what we're doing next week?
Yes, I remember. I just don't know.
A subtle hint. Do you want me to give one?
You go for it, because I feel like mine is going to not be subtle enough.
I will say that Victoria's Secret ads can change you. That's all I'm going to say. They can change you. Do with that what you will. That is our hint for next week's episode. So be sure to tune in. And thank you for listening, everybody. Please, since you're on iTunes, please subscribe to us. Give us a rating. Like us on Facebook. You can find us by just searching Silver Linings Playlist. Leave us a comment. You know, let us know if there's a movie with a downer ending that you would like us to do.
We are open to suggestions, please.
Absolutely. We already have a huge slate of movies lined up. And we've even got some suggestions that are already on our list. So we have a lot to come up that are coming up. So, like I said, please subscribe, please rate, please like us on Facebook. Mally, any last words before we sign off?
Well, as always,
Excelsior.